Good Thursday. Today is September the 12th, and you're listening to My Farm. We're going to continue our visit with Madison Lehman, Demand and Market Development Manager at the Ohio Soybean Council, talking about the soybean crush in Ohio as that oil is used to produce biofuels, specifically biodiesel, how we can have more access to that, and also the importance of the livestock industry to soybean producers. We'll have all the details after this message from our sponsor.
Sponsored by Seed Consultants, simply the best value in the seed industry. Learn more at seedconsultants.com.
I'm visiting again this morning with Madison Corby. Maddie is the Demand and Market Development Manager with the Ohio Soybean Council. Maddie, yesterday we talked about crush capacity, what it does for biofuels and biodiesel here in the state of Ohio, but want to turn the conversation just a little bit to the livestock side. A lot of times there's maybe the food versus fuel debate, but really it's not an either or in this case, because as we crush soybeans, that creates soybean meal, a food product for livestock.
Animal agriculture is our number one customer, so we love the opportunity to service two markets. That's the beauty of working in the soybean industry. We have so many opportunities there, and being able to still support and even increase our support of our livestock customers is just one of the greater benefits of this need for vegetable oil. There's so many things that can be made with soybean oil, and biodiesel is just one of the great opportunities. And it, I think it adds about 13% in value to every bushel of soybeans. So it's been a big market hit for farmers.
My guest again today has been Madison Corby, Demand and Market Development Manager with the Ohio Soybean Council. Now let's check in with Ty Higgins from the Ohio Farm Bureau as he has an update about the impact the drought is having around the Buckeye State.
For the first time in the history of the U.S. Drought Monitor, some parts of Ohio are experiencing exceptional drought conditions. In fact, a quarter of the state is considered to be having an extreme drought, according to the latest monitor. For Ohio Farm Bureau member Kevin Teeters, the magnitude of the dry conditions are indeed historic.
Probably the worst that I can remember since back in 97, 98 area. 2012 was dry, but it was nothing like what it is now.
Teeters, who owns a grain, cattle, and butcher beef operation in Vinton County, is already feeding hay meant for this winter and trucking in water as the springs have dried up. The signs of drought conditions started several months ago.
It was really in the late spring. You know, you get 1.5, 2 inches of rain, and then within 2 or 3 days, the little creeks was right to nothing. We planted and was done by second week of May, and that's usually unheard of in our area. You know, we're usually dragging through into Memorial Day weekend trying to get finished up because of wet areas or just frequent rainstorms not letting things dry back out.
Ohio Farm Bureau is working with government agencies to ensure that farmers impacted by the drought have access to resources needed to sustain their farms throughout the challenges Mother Nature has dealt. Farmers are encouraged to call their local FSA office to start the conversation about what they're seeing on their farms and to discuss what disaster relief programs may be available to them. Before the lack of rain this year, Teeters was hoping to expand the operation. Those plans have dried up, along with the pastures, at least for the short term.
Well, a year like this could set you back 4 to 5 years pretty easy. Plus the revenue we're losing with having to spend more for feed. Plus, you know, we would like to expand more fence to more acres that we have, but the water's not there. And if you don't find a good enough spring whenever it's this dry to tap into, you're not going to find anything any other time most of the time.
Find more drought resources at OhioFarmBureau.org. I'm Ty Higgins reporting.
Thanks, Ty. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more after this message from our sponsor.
Williamson Crop Insurance, home of Decision Max. Decision Max allows you a simple solution to analyze your operation and make informed marketing and crop insurance decisions to mitigate your risks. Manage your whole operation in one place with the ability to blend counties, marketing, and insurance coverage to give a complete overview of your operation. Williamson Crop Insurance, protecting the Eastern Corn Belt since 1980. Learn more at cropcoverage.com.
Thanks, Joe. We're going to change directions now. You know, food labeling can be really important as far as consumer information, and the USDA recently announced updates to guidelines for both animal raising and environmental-related claims that people make on meat and poultry labels. USDA's Rod Bain has more.
Maybe you've seen these voluntary labels on meat and poultry products to indicate how animals were raised. Raised without antibiotics, grass-fed, free-range. Even environmental-oriented labels with claims such as raised using regenerative agricultural practices and climate-friendly. Oversight of such claims is conducted by USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service.
USDA's authority comes from two basic parts of the meat and poultry laws. Number one, we're responsible for ensuring that the products we regulate are safe. Secondly, we are responsible for ensuring that labels are truthful and not misleading.
Deputy Undersecretary for Food Safety Sandra Eskin says in both regards, guidelines are used as recommendations for and documentation of animal raising and environmental related claims on meat and poultry product labeling.
It provides some guidance to companies. It is not in and itself enforceable. Companies should rely on it. And then when our labeling review team looks at labels and labels claims, they will refer to it.
The guidelines themselves are reviewed periodically for updates, with 2019 being the last time for such updates. Until now.
In the last couple of years, we've heard from many stakeholders who are concerned that these claims aren't adequately supported.
In response, the labeling guidelines were updated to strongly encourage the use of third-party verification to substantiate animal raising and environmental related claims for meat and poultry products.
In this context, they're particularly valuable because USDA's authority does not reach back to the farm. We cannot determine whether a product is in fact grass-fed or free-range, and therefore we have to leverage these certifiers who have standards and who have systems to ensure the standards are correct.
Additionally, more robust documentation behind animal raising and environmental related claims are strongly suggested. The Deputy Undersecretary says the labeling guidelines, as guidelines, became effective when released, August 28th specifically. Public comment on the updated guidelines are being accepted now through October 26th through the Federal Register. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Rod. That's what's making agricultural news on my farm. For my 102.7 WMYW, I'm Dusty Sonnenberg. You have a great day.